Tonight, cleared to testify, fired FBI Director James Comey gets the go-ahead to speak publicly. What will he say about his conversations with President Trump as new subpoenas fly in the Russia investigation? Climate deal cliffhanger. Sources telling NBC News the president is leaning toward withdrawing from a historic agreement, sparking a storm of controversy. Backlash against comedian Kathy Griffin out of a job over a shocking photograph, the Trump family condemning her actions. Fire on board a laptop forces an emergency landing. Why safety experts are so concerned. Seeing clearly, patients trying a new alternative to LASIK. Doctors say the results are remarkable. And inspiring America, a lesson in kindness, a stranger helping make a dream come true. Nightly News begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. I'm Savannah Guthrie in for Lester. Tonight, the stage is set for what could be the most dramatic showdown in Washington to take place in a generation. FBI Director James Comey, fired by President Trump, will testify before Congress, telling his story publicly for the first time and setting up a he said with the President of the United States. Will Comey confirm what he reportedly has told friends, that the president leaned on him to lay off parts of the Russia investigation? And tonight, as Congress issues a blizzard of new subpoenas, Hillary Clinton is making her most blunt comments to date, accusing Trump allies of coordinating directly with the Russians. NBC's Andrea Mitchell leads us off tonight.
The whole truth and nothing.
Tonight, James Comey has the green light to testify to Congress as early as next week. Permission from Special Counsel Robert Mueller, and is expected to be asked about what the president said to him about the Russia probe. NBC News has previously reported that Comey told friends he felt pressure to back off from the investigation. This as the House Intelligence Committee approved seven subpoenas, four for former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, and their businesses on the Russia probe, and three for classified reports related to whether former Obama officials Susan Rice, Samantha Power, and John Brennan improperly accessed the identity of Trump associates in intelligence reports. Rice strongly denied it to us.
Did you leak the name of Mike Flynn?
I leaked nothing to nobody. And never have and never would.
Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton for the first time blasted Russian spies for hacking her campaign manager's emails and then working with American political operatives, she said, to target her campaign with false messages on the Internet.
The Russians, in my opinion, and based on the intel and counterintel people I've talked to, could not have known how best to weaponize that information unless they had been guided. And guided by Americans.
Who does she say created those false internet messages? Top campaign fundraisers and the president's son-in-law.
They came to Jared Kushner and basically said, we will marry our operation. We will marry that with the RNC. On two conditions, you pick Steve Bannon and you pick Kellyanne Conway. Bannon, who'd been running the Breitbart operation, supplying a lot of the untrue, false stories.
Clinton also said that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders could get angry about issues, but that voters did not accept that from a woman. But above all, she blames her loss on James Comey for reviving the email issued just before Election Day and not telling voters that he had been investigating Russia and the Trump campaign for months. Savannah?
Andrea Mitchell in Washington, thank you. President Trump, meanwhile, is keeping the world in suspense tonight about his plans regarding the landmark climate agreement known as the Paris Accord. Reports today that the president was about to drop the hammer on that agreement sent a ripple across the globe. But tonight, some activists are holding out hope. NBC White House correspondent Kristen Welker with the enormous impact it could have.
Tonight, mounting anticipation as President Trump inches closer to a final decision on the Paris Climate Agreement. Two administration officials tell NBC News Mr. Trump is leaning toward pulling out of the Obama-era accord.
Very soon. You're going to find out very soon.
Mr. Trump, who once called climate change a hoax, vowed to pull out of the deal as a candidate, calling it a jobs killer.
We will scrap the $5 trillion Obama-Clinton climate action plan and the Clean Power Plan.
The non-binding agreement asks the nearly 200 participating countries to reduce toxic emissions, long a political lightning rod. The issue even dividing the West Wing, with daughter Ivanka Trump and son-in-law Jared Kushner urging him to stay in, but nationalists like Steve Bannon pressing him to pull out. 22 Republican senators wrote a letter asking the president to withdraw, saying the deal places too many regulations on the energy sector and hurts the economy.
He promised his constituents he wasn't going to be part of these economy-killing environmental regulations. Well, that was a promise he made. He's going to keep it.
But supporters of the Paris deal stress it's critical to protecting the environment and national security and warn the Earth had its hottest year on record, a trend they say will only worsen if the president pulls out, creating more heat waves, coastal flooding, and stronger storms like Superstorm Sandy. 33 big companies have pressed the president to stay in, arguing the deal is also good for trade. The only other major countries not a part of the deal, Syria and Nicaragua.
In terms of U.S. leadership, I think it's disastrous.
No matter what the president does, cities and states say they will make their own rules.
When we talk about heat waves and major storms, we're talking about people losing their lives here in Boston, and we cannot let it happen.
Meanwhile, tonight, confusion after the president tweeted just after midnight, quote, despite the constant negative press, followed by the series of letters, Covfefe. That went viral. Today, Press Secretary Sean Spicer saying the president and a small group of people knew exactly what he meant. Savannah.
All right, Kristen Welker at the White House, thank you. And now to the backlash over the shocking viral photo that nearly everyone who saw it found offensive, including the president and first lady. It shows comedian Kathy Griffin holding up a mocked up, bloodied image of President Trump. And while she has apologized, it has already cost her a high-profile job. And a warning to our viewers, the images are graphic. We get more now from NBC's Stephanie Gosk.
I went too far. I made a mistake and I was wrong.
The apology came just hours after the images went viral. Kathy Griffin holding a bloodied likeness of President Donald Trump's head.
The image is too disturbing. I understand how it offends people.
It was not enough for the president. Tweeting this morning, Kathy Griffin should be ashamed of herself. My children, especially my 11-year-old son, Barron, are having a hard time with this. Sick. The first lady followed. As a mother, a wife, and a human being, that photo is very disturbing. It makes you wonder about the mental health of the person who did it.
This is fake blood, just so you know.
The 56-year-old joked during the photo shoot about the possible reaction from law enforcement.
We have to move to Mexico today, because we're being imprisoned. Federal prison.
Not a joke for the Secret Service, which looks into any possible threat to the president. People weren't laughing online either, calling it disgusting, repugnant, shocking. Chelsea Clinton tweeted, "This is vile and wrong. It is never funny to joke about killing a president."
You don't even know what you're talking about.
Today, CNN announced that Griffin would not be hosting the network's New Year's Eve live show, a job she has done for a decade. Senator Al Franken was tough on his fellow comedian, but not ready to cancel an appearance with Griffin in July.
She did make a very heartfelt, fulsome apology. I think she was thinking she was making some artistic statement, but that image has no place in our political dialogue.
At a time of deep political divisions, a rare agreement over what defines bad taste. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
And now to a scare in the air, a laptop catching fire on a cross-country flight, forcing an emergency landing and also raising concerns as the Trump administration is considering banning personal electronics larger than a cell phone on board flights to the U.S. from Europe. Safety experts say this incident shows why that could pose a new risk. NBC's Tom Costello explains why.
At the gate in Grand Rapids, Michigan, JetBlue Flight 915, after a smoking laptop forced an emergency landing.
It was pretty scary, though, to see smoke on the plane. We're at 35,000 feet.
Now, aviation safety experts say it should be a red flag warning to Homeland Security that placing all electronics larger than a cell phone in the cargo hold on flights from Europe could be dangerous. On Friday, Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly insisted lithium-ion batteries are dangerous if they're loose, but pose little risk if they're in a device.
And the device is not on. Quite safe, I'm told, by all the studies.
But the FAA has long warned about the fire danger. In a report issued just last week, the FAA counts at least 48 fires or smoke incidents involving lithium batteries or chargers in just the last 17 months, including cell phones, tablets, laptops, e-cigarettes, cameras, and power tools, many of them off. This passenger's headsets caught fire, causing severe burns. Now, safety experts are warning of the dangers of loading so many devices into the cargo hold where passengers and crew members can't put out a fire.
I have significant concerns because we know that there are a number of lithium batteries that are going to spontaneously go into thermal runaway and create the potential for fire.
While cargo holds do have special halon fire suppression systems, would that handle a runaway lithium-ion battery fire? An FAA safety alert warns flight crews to use water. A company called PlaneGuard sells special containment cases for in-flight fires, but so far, no U.S. airlines have bought one.
Homeland Security tells NBC News it is still planning on that so-called laptop ban on European flights in the coming weeks. It's working on that. Safety experts very concerned about the fire danger, though. Savannah?
All right, Tom Costello, thank you. Tonight, police say a potential disaster has been averted at the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. A man arrested, found with an assault weapon and ammo in his car, but it's still unclear what, if anything, he was planning. Our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, with the details.
Shortly after getting a tip that a man who checked in last night at the Trump Hotel had weapons, Washington, D.C. police and Secret Service agents had him in custody.
I believe that the officers and our federal partners, and in particular the tipster coming forward, averted a potential disaster here in our nation's capital.
But why the man came to the Trump Hotel just six blocks from the White House remains a mystery. Police say 43-year-old Brian Moles of Edinburgh, Pennsylvania, checked into the hotel around 1 a.m. and told the parking attendant he had guns in his car. Around the same time, Pennsylvania State Police relayed word from a friend that Moles was headed to Washington with guns and had talked about the man who blew up the Oklahoma City Federal Building in 1995. About 2 a.m., investigators say police knocked on his hotel room door, asked if he had guns, and he said yes, in the car. A police report says he had a pistol, an assault rifle, and 90 rounds of ammunition. Law enforcement officials say he wanted to stay in the hotel to show his support for the president.
A protective intelligence interview of Mr. Moles was conducted by agents of the Washington field office, which revealed that he posed no immediate threat to any Secret Service protectees.
This is Brian Moles checking in at home.
Officials say Moles has given conflicting information about why he came here, but they say there's no indication he intended to harm anyone.
For now, he's accused of possessing unregistered firearms. He'll be formally charged in court tomorrow. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
There has been a massive bomb blast in Afghanistan, an attack in what's supposed to be the most secure part of the capital. At least 90 people are dead, up to 400 injured, including Americans. Our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, with more.
New security camera footage tonight of what witnesses say was the biggest bomb they've ever heard in Kabul. And that's saying a lot in a city that has seen decades of war. At 8:30 a.m., rush hour, a tanker truck packed with explosives killed dozens.
It was a sudden explosion.
Detonating in front of the German embassy in the heart of the city's diplomatic quarter. It was so powerful, it left a crater the size of a backyard swimming pool and shook buildings for a mile around.
The way that the house was shaking, I realized that it was quite a big blast and it was quite scary because I didn't know whether the house would hold up.
Among the injured, the State Department says 11 American contractors working in Kabul. None of their injuries is said to be life-threatening. The Taliban denied it carried out the attack, which killed mostly Afghan civilians on their way to work. No claim from ISIS either, which earlier this year rampaged through a Kabul hospital, sending patients and visitors cowering onto window ledges. The Trump administration has been struggling to find a new policy for Afghanistan. The U.S. military dropped the so-called mother of all bombs on ISIS last month. But today's carnage shows little has changed.
U.S. officials say the Trump administration is considering sending up to 5,000 more American troops to Afghanistan to reinforce the 8,400 already there to stop the bleeding in a war that seems to be on the back burner of Washington's agenda. Savannah?
All right, Richard Engel, thank you. And still ahead, want to throw away your glasses or contacts but worried about getting LASIK surgery? The new alternative, doctors say, is less invasive. We're back now with news that could mean better vision for you or your family members. It's a new kind of eye procedure just approved in the U.S. Doctors say it could be a better, less invasive alternative to LASIK for some patients. NBC's Dr. John Torres with details.
In suburban Cleveland, 44-year-old Tina Noel has struggled with glasses and contacts for most of her life.
I feel like my glasses restrict me from doing things, just simple, normal, everyday tasks.
Her doctor recommended a new laser procedure called SMILE, approved only a few months ago in the United States. Dr. Ronald Krueger from the Cleveland Clinic says for some patients, it's more effective than LASIK.
A lot of people know about LASIK. SMILE is a new procedure. What's the difference between the two?
You know, I often say that SMILE is like a laparoscopic LASIK because it's making this smaller incision.
A laser makes a tiny cut in the cornea as opposed to a large flap with LASIK. Within hours, patients can see better. Noel was able to go back to work the next day. One advantage compared to LASIK, fewer patients report dry eye, which was key for Noel, who already has that problem.
Because it's less invasive, it doesn't dry your eyes out as much.
The procedure is FDA approved for people who are nearsighted and do not have astigmatism and could be expanded to more patients down the road. For now, it costs around $5,000 for both eyes. It's not covered by insurance.
Nice to be able to see letters without the glasses.
For Tina Noel, yeah. It was a good investment.
I know, and it could just be in my mind, but driving so much clearer, the sky seems bluer and, you know, the grass seems greener.
Freedom from glasses, thanks to a new technique to see life more clearly. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, Cleveland.
And coming up next, touching the sun, NASA announcing a historic mission. Back now with an amazing escape caught on camera, a dramatic video appearing to show someone jumping from a burning fuel tanker on a Denver interstate. Officials say it blew a tire and crashed into the median, sparking a fire that shut down the highway. Now to a big announcement from NASA, an ambitious new mission, a journey to touch the face of the sun. Scientists are getting ready to launch a spacecraft that would take them as close as they have ever gotten to the center of our solar system. Here's NBC's Miguel Almaguer.
Blasting off next summer, NASA is taking space exploration to new heights. Its first mission to the sun and its outermost atmosphere called the corona. The unmanned 10-foot Parker Solar Probe set to launch into history.
Solar Probe is going to be the hottest, fastest mission. I like to call it the coolest, hottest mission under the sun.
Reaching speeds of 430,000 miles an hour, fast enough to travel from New York to Tokyo in less than a minute, the Parker Solar Probe will need to withstand temperatures of 2,500 degrees. No spacecraft has ever come this close to the sun.
Solar Probe Bus is a really unique mission. It's really the first mission to a star.
The mission to shed light on the sun, providing insight about the physics of stars, the dynamics of space weather, and solar flares that can impact our satellites and power grids.
Until you actually go there and touch the sun, you really can't answer these questions.
The out-of-this-world mission ends in June 2025. And it may forever change the way we see and understand the sun from planet Earth. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Pretty exciting. Coming up next, he was walking 6 miles to work each way, but a chance encounter put this teen's future on a much different path. Finally, tonight, the story of a hardworking teen who was scraping together every cent in the hope of one day going to college. But thanks to a twist of fate, that day arrived much sooner than he ever expected. NBC's Kevin Tibbles has our Inspiring America report.
It's been a long journey for this young man whose dream is to be a teacher.
Everybody says education is key, so I'm just trying to get the key to life.
18-year-old Tariq Barksdale is from a family of 9 kids. He was bussing tables and walking 6 miles each way to and from work, desperate to save money for college.
I just had to get out there and walk.
Then one frigid winter night, Jacob Villa and his son spotted Tariq walking on the side of the road.
should we pick him up? He's like, yeah, Dad, I think we should.
After talking a bit, apprehensions on both sides were laid to rest, and Jacob heard of Tariq's goal to teach.
All right.
Jacob mentors kids at a local boxing club and got to thinking.
It's not always about how much money that you can make in this world, but how much of a difference you can make.
We were always taught to help someone, like, need be, because in any situation, that could be you.
That's Jacob's younger brother, Joshua, a student at Wichita State. He told the school to Rick's story, and it helped organize funding.
We reached out to the community. Family donated the calculators, bought him a laptop, book bags, supplies.
And when Tariq hit those books, there was no looking back. He's made the dean's list and remains determined to teach.
I feel like that'd be good to show the next generation the light.
You got a ways to go. Have you got it in you?
Yeah, I know I got it in me.
Thanks to a chance encounter, he's on the road to fulfilling that dream. Kevin Tibbles, NBC News, Wichita, Kansas.
And that's going to do it for us on a Wednesday night. I'm Savannah Guthrie in for Lester. I'll see you tomorrow morning on Today. For all of us at NBC News, thank you so much for watching and have a good night.